gone through and standing in line. The clubs I'll never get in. It's like the bottom of the ninth, and I'm never gonna win this. Life hasn't done that quite the way I wanted
to. I'm gonna try real hard, okay? I swear I am.
Okay.
From here until the NHL awards, Wish,
I can't
I'm gonna try really hard.
I can't
to like them. You can do it, man. I'm gonna try it. You're gonna try it for the good of the game, Wish. You know how we keep hearing about good of the game. Do what's right for the game, Shanny. Do what's right for the game, Gary.
It's like a remedial,
do what's right for the game, Sydney. Wish.
It's like a
do what's
remedial
good for the game.
Country. It's like a remedial Canadian interpretation of country rock.
Hang on a
it's
second, Elena. Pump it up a little bit more. Let's get that soap and warm water feeling here for Nickelback for our man Wyshynski. Come on, Wish. Give it a chance.
Oh.
Uh-huh. It's got the dude from ZZ Top in the song, man.
It's true. Doesn't make it any better.
Give it a chance.
Oh, here's the hook, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's right.
Yes, we do. You know you do too, Wish. I do. Elena does. Uh-huh. Don't eat, just do drugs, rock out.
For those who don't know, Nickelback announced today as the headline act for the 2012 NHL Awards on June 20th at the Encore Theater at Wynn Las Vegas. Nickelback will be performing twice on the show, sponsored by Verizon.
Mm-hmm.
Said Nickelback frontman Chad Kroeger, as diehard hockey fans, just because they're Canadian,
"No,
we can never get enough of the NHL, even when we're on tour, and there is nothing more exciting for hockey fans than the playoffs. The NHL Awards is the this is where I love press releases. The NHL Awards is the culmination of celebrating the best players and moments the season has produced."
Yeah, yes, it just flows off the tongue. Yeah, haven't you just said that in casual conversation, Wish?
Kroger's putting pen to paper and he's saying, God, how to best capture what the NHL Awards are? Let's see here. I know. They're the culmination of celebrating the best players and moments. Yada, yada, yada.
Listen, you know what? It's easy to hate Nickelback. It's really easy to hate Nickelback. Listen, it's easy to hate Nickelback's label, EMI. You know why? Because the Sheffield Steelers this year did a kick-ass video to this song for their hockey team.
Mm-hmm.
And they put in a copyright claim on it and had it removed from YouTube. It was one of the best things we've seen all this season as far as, you know, creatively, collectively putting something together to celebrate hockey. Listen, hey, Nickelback, if you're really interested in celebrating hockey, give the Sheffield Steelers their video back. How about that for a clue?
Oh,
if you really care about hockey,
yeah,
if you really care about hockey, Chad, Nickelback, give Sheffield their video back. Like, go to YouTube, folks. Go check out the Sheffield Steelers. Maybe you saw before. Wish, you put this up on Puck Daddy when it first came out. True or false?
What, Sheffield Steelers?
Yeah.
True.
You put it up on Puck Daddy right away. Boom, that's the first place that many of us saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, I got the press release today. I'm like, I'll be a cute little guy. I'll find the video again. I'll tweet it out. Everyone will have a good laugh. It's a great little bit of PR for the Sheffield Steelers. And everyone have a joke. And I find it, and EMI put in the copyright claim. So you can't find it. So all that great art is lost because of Nickelback's label. Nickelback, if you care about hockey, give Sheffield their video.
Nickelback will be featured in the 2012 NHL Awards promotional materials, including TV, print, and radio ads, digital banners, and email blasts. Yeah!
Ooh.
In addition, the band's Here and Now tour, its first North American arena tour in 2 years. Has it really been 2 years? We'll receive promotional support across the NHL's broadcast, online, mobile, and social media platforms. I smell Nickelback songs taking us in and out of every break during the Stanley Cup final. What do you smell, Merrick?
Oh, yeah, what the Rock is cooking. And I also smell that, too. I think that'll happen. I'm going to try really hard to like them, though. Like I said, it's too easy to hate a band like that. It's just too easy. Although, you know what? For the longest time, I always said that, you know, Nickelback was like Stephen Harper, our prime minister here in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
No one admits that they like him, but they sell a million records and Stephen Harper gets elected as prime minister somehow. No one will admit to voting for Stephen Harper. No one will admit to buying Nickelback albums, yet they're multi-million dollar sellers.
Look,
over and over.
Here's the only thing I'll admit about Nickelback. I like the song that kicks off Monday Night Raw. It's pretty good. It's really rocking. I don't know the name of it. Don't care to know the name of it, but it's pretty good.
You know, maybe we go back to Barbara Streisand on this, but man, the bottom lip singer has really killed music, don't you think? You know, for all Pearl Jam fans, you're gonna hate me for saying this, but the minute I hear someone sing from their bottom lip, I tune out. And I pin it right back to Barbara Streisand, she wasn't the first to do it, but the first to popularize it, I suppose. Man, that did a lot of damage to music. Anyway, as an aside, Wish, I'm gonna get you to try to like, will you come on this little magical journey with me up until the NHL Awards and try to like Nickelback?
Here's the thing, when you take it within the context of the NHL Awards, like, it's not actually that bad, because within the context of the NHL Awards, the bar is set at Chaka Khan. So really, anything above that bar is gonna be better.
Dude, they had Snoop. Dude, they had Snoop on the awards.
You know, this is not the first time Nickelback's been on the awards, I don't think, either. I heard that they were on when they were back in Canada, when they would have Ron McLean coming out as a poor man's Johnny Carson, making jokes about obscure Canadian cities that no one gave a shit about.
Are you getting on Moose Jaw again?
I'm saying
remember
that
we had that
awards,
agreement?
The awards have gotten better since they were in Las Vegas. Don't you agree?
Yeah, but here's the problem. Everyone that gets an award is very gracious about it. And the people that get, you're not going to get anyone that's going to, we need more Pat Kane's winning awards is essentially what I'm saying. Like nothing
something
really
up
like
there, you mean? There,
yeah, there's not like a moment where someone, like, wouldn't it be awesome if someone streaked the awards? Like, it just needs something, don't you think? It just needs a what's the line? A little bit of chaos from the Joker, right? It needs a little something to happen. It's very calculated.
Listen,
it's very safe.
If you're, hey, listen, easy if, fix. I mean, if
you're
you
going
want
to the
awards to be streaked, then just nominate Scott Hartnell for something.
I want someone to streak the awards, man. Do something.
Doesn't he seem the type? Who do you think is the player most likely to? I think Hartnell. Like Hartnell's like the hemp necklace wearing kind of guy who just, you know, seems like the type that might sit sack on chair playing a guitar during the summer. You know what I mean?
Who do you think the guy who's a little too comfortable being naked in the dressing room is essentially what you're saying? The guy, and there's always the guy, you know the guy at the gym, Wish, who is really comfortable being naked and always wants to come up and talk to you and puts his leg up on the bench when he does?
Yeah, puts the leg up on the bench, because that's the comfortable thing to do, right?
That move, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, cowbell, really?
Well, he's really a multitasker, airing it out and then also having a conversation at the same time.
Any NHL? That's a better question of the day than the one we came up with for today.
Patrick Kane would obviously be the one that would go up and like kind of stagger around. He would like the most likely to fall over the podium would be Patrick Kane.
Yeah.
Who'd be the most likely to say the wrong thing? Is the question.
Ilya Prigalov.
Without the
damn it,
any,
vote that man
the
for Vezina.
Any substance.
Yeah, you don't need it. Screw that. He'd go and say it whether he's at 18 vodkas or just ate a cantaloupe. He don't care. He's saying the same thing.
But you see, to bring it back to the awards, though, your argument essentially I agree with, which is that the reason the All-Star draft worked out so well this year is because basically it was a bunch of guys in the back boozing. And then they go up, and everybody was real loosey-goosey. If they did the NHL Awards more like the Golden Globes, where it was like sitting around a table with your teammates and knocking back drinks before you go up there, it'd be the best. It already has kind of a boozy Vegas vibe.
Uh-huh.
But you can bring it all the way now with this if you did it like the Golden Globes.
Yeah, like don't you want to see like, I don't know, take like David Backus win the Selkie and go up there with a gin and tonic in his hand and say, here, hold this? Like, so Jeremy, hey, Jeremy, hold this. Let me make my speech and then grab it back from him and go back to his seat. Come on. No, you got to get up there and read from your very, I want to thank my head coach, Ken Hitchcock, and my fellow teammates, the St. Louis Blues. You know, a lot of good people were nominated, you know, Pavel Datsyuk. And it's too formula. It's too calculated. And
if what you're asking is if I'd like to see Ryan Kessler turn the Selkie into a bong on stage, yeah, of course I would. Who wouldn't?
Hey, it's 420 day, by the way.
Oh,
Blaze
hey.
Away. Yeah.
Wow. Very impressive.
Blaze away, folks. I'd like to think that a large majority of our audience on a daily basis listens to us while they may be high.
I think we had somebody say that they used to bake and listen to the show. I forget.
Yeah, on their
was.
Balcony. Dude, yeah. I think Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
You can't make fun of that, by the way.
Speaking of the – I won't. We got – so coming up with the show, obviously, we got Game Show Friday. We've got plenty of talk about the games tonight and the games last night. But while we're on the awards, sir, Calder Trophy – Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Gabriel Landeskog, and Adam Henrique of the New Jersey Devils instead of Matt Reed.
Ooh, wow.
What do you think about that?
Do you consider that to be a snub, as it was described today in Philadelphia?
I actually do. The Philly writers throw around the word snub a lot about different stuff, right? About their guys not getting their just due. That's a snub, man. When's the last time you saw the leading goal scorer amongst rookies snubbed out of the top three?
Yeah, I don't know. But there wasn't a great PR campaign that was done. Like, you know, late in the season, like Alex Pietrangelo, like his agent and the St. Louis Blues really got behind a really big Norris push for Alex Pietrangelo. There wasn't really a push for Matt Reed, was there?
There wasn't.
Like, I think he's the victim of no PR.
You know why? Because they couldn't. It's like having two candidates for best actress in the same movie. You can't choose one over the other. You can't choose Reed over Couturier if you're the Flyers, can you?
Why not?
You know what I mean? It's politics, man.
Well, then that's the agent's job then.
Yeah,
that's the agent's job, and then not the team.
Henrique fell off pretty significantly in the second half of the season compared to his output in November and December when he was basically like a point per game player. Like I was frankly surprised that he made the cut. I thought one that Reed leading the rookies in goals was going to get him in because Reed played with lesser line mates, which leads me to point two. I really thought that Henrique was going to get overlooked because he was the beneficiary of playing with Kovalchuk and Parise.
I don't have a problem the way it ended up.
That would have been your top three.
I also look at impact on the team, and I don't see Matt Reed impacting the Philadelphia Flyers the way that Henrique or Gabriel Landeskog on that awesome line with O'Reilly and Downey or
that's
Ryan
a good point on Henrique because Henrique saved their bacon.
Team.
I mean, from like an MVP perspective, he moved into Zajac and saved their bacon.
Yeah. Because I don't, and you know me, Wish, I'm not a big stats guy. Like, everyone listening to this podcast who knows me a little bit now knows that I'm not a big stats guy. I'm more of a stories guy. And to me, the story of Adam Henrique is that Zajac is out. Oh no, Chicken Little, the sky is falling. Hey, don't worry, guys. I got this.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the stats because the stats are going to be the key in determining who actually wins the Calder. I think we would agree it's a two-horse race, yes?
Oh yeah, it's Landeskog and Hopkins.
Okay. So Thomas Drantz, who's a Vancouver blogger and a good one, brings up the point this morning, and this is the way I saw it too. Nugent-Hopkins versus Landeskog from a stats standpoint is really an argument between the stats that you find in the newspaper and the advanced stats. Mm-hmm. The stats that you find in the newspaper, you look at what Nugent-Hopkins did. Points per game average is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. If you take that at face, he is without question the best offensive rookie this season. You got to go a little deeper to make the argument for Landeskog. Even though they tied in points, RNH's points per game average puts him, I think, head and shoulders above Landeskog as far as stats go. But he didn't. Where did the points come from? Well, a good number of them came on the power play, like a large number. I forget exactly what the percentage was. I want to say it's like 20 some odd points came on the power play I think it was 52 he ended up with. You go deeper. He didn't play shorthanded. Landeskog did. You go even deeper, Landeskog played against a tougher competition than Nugent-Hopkins did. He played in every situation. He threw the body more. He towards the end of the season, was a main reason why the Avalanche were even in contention. From my perspective, with all due respect to Nugent-Hopkins, who was a rock star at the beginning of the season, I don't even know how it's an argument that Landeskog's not the rookie of the year.
Yeah, he's mine. And the argument coming out of Edmonton is the one that you articulated. Hey, 52 points, tied with Gabriel Landeskog, but 20 games less.
Yeah.
However, again, I go to impact. You can go to impact on team, and you can argue that, listen, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins had a hell of an impact on the Edmonton Oilers when he played there. But you look at the all-situations factor, you look at the complete player factor. I still put a lot of stock in who grows throughout the season. Mm-hmm. Staying healthy, I think, is listen, that's a big one, too. I know we're not the hugest plus-minus guys, but a difference of 22 between the two of them does say something. It doesn't say everything, but it does say something. And game-winning goals.
23 of his 52 points in the power play. He played a total of 2 minutes shorthanded this season, Nugent-Hopkins. And the other aspect is that, you know what, for all of the things that you're supposed to be effective in, let me rephrase that, one of the things that Nugent-Hopkins should be effective in is what? Face-offs. And as we talked about earlier this year,
he wasn't when he was struggling, though.
He finished at 37.5 on faceoffs.
But that's the one thing we said. And remember the very first game the Oilers played this year was against Pittsburgh Penguins. And that was one of the things we looked, cause that's an early indicator of where you're at strength wise. We all said, is he skilled enough to play in the NHL? Yes. Is he strong enough as a center? No. How can you prove that? What's the percentage of the dot? He was getting gobbled by guys in the faceoff circle.
Yeah.
Right? Now, did he get better towards the end of the season? Yeah, of course he did. And he got stronger. But again, that comes back to, you know, making your way through the entire season and not physically strong enough to compete at the faceoff dot. Not at that level.
Yeah.
All right. Crosby was crap in the faceoff circle when he started too. So I mean, it's not like all hope is lost.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe himself a lot better. With that, we both agree that it will be Landeskog for Calder, Nugent Hopkins number two, and then obviously Henrik number three. And with that, we shall start the show proper.
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
That's a hockey, you know. It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad?
And Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Sabin is not English for punch me or headlock me in a scrum.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
In case you were wondering why Alexander Ovechkin played less than 2 minutes in the third period yesterday.
Oh, was Dale Hunter line matching again?
Dale Hunter was line matching again. So it wasn't necessarily a benching, mind you, even though Ovechkin was terrible that game.
Oh!
He played 158 in the third period and 15 seconds in the final 14 minutes of the game. Dale Hunter, this is according to the Washington Times and Steve Wino, Dale Hunter said that we were, quote, we were matching lines and they were going back with the Bergeron line. So sometimes some lines get shortchanged a bit. They do whatever it takes to win the game. Ovechkin off the ice. Now keep in mind, again, we all know what the situation is here. He's a defensive liability. And in that game last night, I had a Caps fan at the pub last night when we were talking about Ovechkin who looked at me and said, was he drunk? he thought he played that poorly last night. He just asked if he was loaded. I don't believe he was, but he spun off away from a Chara check, lost his edge, and that contributed to the Bruins' only goal. Hopped on Ferentz's back, picked up a helper on Semin's thing, but it was negligible. I mean, it was a really bad game. At one point in the game last night, Merrick, as the Caps were on the power play, the Caps get the puck. They're going back into the Bruins zone to reestablish. Ovechkin has circled all the way back to the red line, okay, to build up momentum to come back into the offensive zone. And I'm thinking, to what? Stop at the blue line to work the point? It was like the widest turn you could possibly make to get back to the Bruins zone. And it's those little things he does during games that the critics point out and just say, what's he thinking? What's he doing? Why isn't his head more in what he should be doing at this point in the game?
Did you expect Dale Hunter to say anything, to be completely candid at that moment, though? Like,
no.
There's no way he's going to bury him and say, well, yeah, he was playing poorly. He's not gonna say that about
Alex
Ovechkin.
But we have talked about this on the show before, about how the mandate to Dale Hunter, we assumed when he got hired, was Ovi plays, Semin plays. Because that's why Boudreau got canned. Part of the reason was that he lost a lot of the team, whatever. Mm-hmm. But he tried to take a stand and play around with ice time and send messages and that kind of thing. Ovechkin just played 2 minutes in the third period of a playoff game. I never thought we'd see that after what happened to Boudreau. Boudreau must be reading that and going out of his friggin' mind thinking about that Hunter gets away with that and Boudreau couldn't.
Semin got sat down too, didn't he? Semin got line matched. Semin got sat down too, didn't he?
I think he only played a couple
of minutes in that third as well. Like both of them. The two Russians both got sat down in that third period. What's the story for the Washington Capitals right now?
Semin ice time third period, by the way, 3:03.
Mm-hmm.
So,
What do you think the big story for the Caps is right now?
Braden Holtby.
That's it. That's the one. And you know, we looked at the beginning of the playoffs and said, who has the possibility of pulling a Ken Dryden or pulling, take your pick of the miracle goaltender. And we looked at Quick, and we looked at Braden Holtby. And there have been a couple of moments where you said to yourself, There was the OT winner in Boston where you said, oh, man, he's got to have that one, the short side goal. But other than that, Holpe's been flipping outstanding.
He had a little problem with his glove in Game 3. But what he did last night, Brooks Like said this to me after the game, what he did last night was calm them down. Like, that game could have been a little bit weird with Backstrom being out and you didn't know how the Bruins were going to bring it physically. We'll get to that in a second. But he calmed them down, and he gave them some backbone. And when push came to shove in the third period, he gobbled up every rebound until about the 9-minute mark, and then the Caps didn't allow – I'm sorry, the 7-minute mark, and then the Caps didn't allow a shot.
Mm-hmm.
So the Bruins, on the other hand, though, from what I gather both coaches said before the game, don't get into any of the rough stuff because we assume it's all going to be called. And I'm sure that was a byproduct of Pittsburgh-Philly the night before and on probably some noise that they heard from the league with regard to the after-the-whistle stuff. But they had no snarl. I mean, the reason they won Game 3 is because they started pummeling the Capitals, taking it to them physically, getting them off their game with stuff after the whistle, Marchand flopping around like the fish in the Faith No More video. They did nothing last night that would even disturb the Capitals. And now we get to a point with this Bruins team. If they're not going to knuckle up and try to take the Caps out of the game physically, well, then you're going to have to put some goals on the board. And now we're at a point where we're starting to really wonder where the hell Lucic, Sagan, and Bergeron are in the series.
Well, Sagan's down
and
to the Marchand. Third line. Sagan's down to the third line of practice today. Brad Marchand's down to the fourth line. Lucic is a huge question mark in this series. And did you see Tim Thomas's quotes afterwards?
Kind of blaming his teammates.
Well, yeah, we get a lot of shots, but they're all from the perimeter, and we need more more presence in front of the net. Mm. How do you feel about that? Considering how every member of the Boston Bruins, publicly and I assume privately as well, went out of their way to protect Tim Thomas during the White House issue.
Well,
right? They never hung him out to dry. How do you like him pointing the finger at the forwards for the series being where it's at? If you're a Boston Bruins forward, you say, dude, we covered your ass when the Obama thing was going down. And now we get this from you?
I think if nothing else, it just breaks the unwritten code that you don't trash your goalie. You know what I mean? Like, those guys would never call out Thomas and be like,
well, that's just it.
You know.
He's got to.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Can you see, like, Andrew Ferentz saying, like, oh, man, he's got to make that save?
Oh, I could, because, I mean, they're diametrically opposed politically. I'm sure fans would just say it to trash the Tea Party guy. I'm kidding, of course.
Okay,
but I get what you're saying.
Pick a player. Like, could you see, you know, Rich Peverly, Tyler Seguin, or, you know, Chris Kelly saying, oh, man, I'll tell you what, if Thomas makes those two saves in the first, we're right back in this game. Could you see that for a second? No, but the goalie gets a pass on. Yeah, our quality of shots isn't good. Our shot selection is poor, and we need more guys standing in front of the net.
But at the same time, like Thomas shouldn't be talking smack because he's not been that good. He's fought the puck. He's kind of had bad rebound control in these two games in D.C. Maybe it's a byproduct of playing there or whatever. If I were the Bruins, I'd sit him down. I'd show him video of games 1 and 2 and show him video of games 3 and 4. And I'd go, you're not Tim Thomas. That's Tim Thomas. Like the broad in the taxi cab in that credit card commercial. So the Caps win last night. They knocked the series at 2-2. Meanwhile, last night, Merrick.
Yeah.
My pick to come out of the Western Conference, the team that I believed in, the St. Louis Blues, are now one win away. One win away from the promised land, baby.
The St. Louis Sharks?
One win away from
the San Jose Blues?
The San Jose Sharks.
The San Jose Blues? Who is this? St. Louis Sharks?
St. Louis Blues is
I'll
the team that I believe
what.
In.
You know yes. what? We talk a lot about how the New York Rangers protect their goaltender. And this is classic Ken Hitchcock, too. We talk a lot about the Rangers, and we think of Dan Girardi and Ryan Callahan. But if there's one team out there that either gives the Rangers a run for their money or is better at protecting their goaltender than the New York Rangers, it's the St. Louis Blues. And you know who the best mm-hmm. example is? Alex Pietrangelo. How quick does he close up shooting lanes? But it's not just him. It's like everybody. Like, lanes get closed fast. They get closed quick when you're playing against the St. Louis Blues. Like, they force you to make decisions in the offensive zone really fast because you have the lane to shoot for a split second, and then, boom, someone's there. Like, they, in their own zone, this team impresses the hell out of me. I'm so impressed watching the St. Louis Blues. Even with the, you know, the quicker pace and the heavier puck and all that, all the cliches that apply for the playoffs, they're still doing it and still rocking it the same way they did in the regular season. It is impressing the hell out of me.
Tell you what, man. 95 Devils.
That's what you're seeing in
this
team?
A little bit of a 95 Devils vibe of this team, I think. They do it by committee. Good goaltending. Mm-hmm. Great responsible defense. They could go on a little run.
Yeah. And listen, the West, like both conferences are wide open. Of course they could go on a run. Nashville could go on a run. LA could still go on a run. Vancouver could go on a run. The Penguins could go on a run.
You know who's not going on a run?
Who?
Chicago Blackhawks.
Lookouts.
I'm sorry. They're done. And I wish they weren't. I picked them in the series, but you can't come back from this. You can't come back from losing the overtime games they've lost in this series. And more to the point, losing an overtime game in which you've rallied with two goals in the final 10 minutes of regulation, and you lost host of the game before, so you have all that emotional component there. You can't lose that game. And how did they lose that game? Terribly, Merrick. They lost that game terribly in overtime.
Bad goal. It was a little dribbler. Did that puck hit the back of the net? Did that Bodker goal hit the back of the net? I swear that thing barely dribbled over the goal line. I know it's a close game and it's a low scoring game, but man, Corey Crawford just hasn't given his team the shot that they
Sid Boddicker after the game. Actually, I don't know how it slid in, but I'm happy it did. Ladies.
You gotta close that up. Oh yeah. Oops.
And then he went on to say it went in and it's an amazing feeling. Again, I miss college. So
you don't need college. Right, you have a podcast. You have a podcast to get it all out.
So the Coyotes now take a commanding 3-1 series lead. They're not coming back, right? I mean, we can agree that Chicago's done.
Jonathan Toews, man. I still won't count out a team that has Jonathan Toews on it. Laugh all you want, I know. And Crawford's giving up, giving up honeydew melons, but I don't give up on
you gotta
a team
win
that has Jonathan
three straight
Toews
games
on
against
it.
Mike Smith. You gotta win three straight against Mike Smith.
Ah, just run him.
And then speaking of goaltending, you know what? Just run him. That's funny. Speaking of goaltending, as a Devils fan, you know, it's funny. I've seen a lot of people put over Marty last night because he set the record. He beat the Patrick Waugh shutout record for the playoffs and looked great in doing so and shut out Florida 4-0. Series tied 2-2 going back to Sunrise. As a Devils fan, this is Marty Brodeur. This is the goalie who looks completely human, completely average, gives up softies in one game, comes back, finds redemption, next game, softies, next game, redemption, game 7, someone scores with 0.2 seconds left. It's just, the script writes itself. So, although I am, again, reminded in watching that game last night that the Devils can win this series whenever they decide to, I still don't believe they're going to win the series. I'm just pessimistic about it.
We talked about this at the beginning of the playoffs. I thought, and I think you agreed with me on this one, that Marty has one series in him. I don't know that he has two. I'm pretty sure he doesn't. But he has one series in him for that very fact. That there's gonna be like some, oh, there's a shallow fly ball to left center, that'll end the inning. There's a lot of those games. And then there's ones where it's the bottom of the ninth and he hits a tape measure where the pitcher doesn't even look over his shoulder, nor does the outfield, because the minute the ball hits the bat, it is gonzo. And that's the frustrating thing about Marty Brodeur, and that's what makes it so difficult if you're the New Jersey Devils. Who is this guy now? Who is Marty Brodeur now? Because sometimes he looks like Hardy Astrom, and other times he looks like the ghost of Terry Sawchuk. It's remarkable. Like I don't know that I've ever seen a goaltender in back-to-back scenarios look completely different. Like if it were the Sedins, you'd swear that it's like, okay, they just changed. It's the same number, but they've changed the guys.
First off, he does have a Hardy Astrom, from what I understand. I mean, he does tend to like a pizza pie now and again. But, you know, look, you're absolutely right. And like I've said, they're going to go as far as he takes them. Although I am encouraged by how quick DeBoer was with the hook for Hedberg in game 3. That tells me that it's not going to be a case where they're going to leave Marty in there if he's a liability. I think things have changed. Much like the things have changed for Vancouver, I think things have changed for New Jersey, where, yeah, they're still going to go back to Marty. They're always going to give him the benefit of the doubt. He's always going to get deference. But they're not going to be afraid to make the change, I don't think, anymore.
Do you think he has more than
a big deal?
Do you think he has more than a series in him?
No.
I don't think so either. I don't, I, I, I just
Dmitry
don't.
Chestnikov checks in. Dmitry Chestnikov checks in. Marty is ready for the KHL.
I can't see Marty playing in the KHL. Can you see Marty coming back for one more year?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I think he comes back. The other thing we should talk about now, actually, with regard to players that are aging out of the NHL, a lot of stuff being written today about Nicholas Lidstrom potentially playing his last game as a Red Wing tonight against Nashville.
I don't think so either.
Yeah,
you know
but when a guy like Kevin Allen, who has covered Lidstrom since Lidstrom was a pup, comes out and says that he's not quite sure how the wind's blowing on Lidstrom, you got to listen. I still think he's coming back. I mean, the Winter Classic being one reason.
Ah, there it is.
The idea that the Red Wings can go out and reload this summer being another reason. I mean, I think he's coming back, but maybe he's not. Maybe this is it.
I think it's the Winter Classic. I don't think a guy like Nick Lidstrom, because you look at all the things that this guy's done, and by the time the career wraps up, it's just another check mark. You know, you had the chance to do this, do it. Like, you won the Stanley Cup, gold medal, Norris trophies, you know, chasing Bobby Orr for the trophy record, all of it, Conn Smythe. You know, it's just another on the career checklist of things to do. I think the minute Detroit got the Winter Classic, that sealed it for Nick Lidstrom. This is just based on people that I talk to that know Nick Lidstrom. I don't know Nick Lidstrom. I know guys that have played with Nick Lidstrom and get a sense of who he's about and what he's all about. And the minute that they announced it was Toronto and Detroit, I said, well, Nick's coming back for one more year. And to your point, too, they can, I don't know.
They can load up.
Guy in the New Jersey Devils.
Or the My only hope is that they've reached their dimple quota in Detroit. They don't need any more dimples.
Hey, he's been good in the last couple of games. Hey, Zach Parise?
He has. He has. He's played better. They're all good. I mean, again, what the Devils did last night was what they've done during certain periods of the series, but they did it for the full game last night, and you just get the sense that they're going to be able to put the hammer down and beat this team whenever they decide to. But you know, just whether they can put three periods together, that kind of hockey is the question. Speaking about the Red Wings real quick, Todd Bertuzzi's got nothing. Fuopola's got one assist. Mm-hmm. Brad Stewart's got a -5. There are a number of guys in this series that you would expect to come play in a playoff that have not. And I'm still – somebody asked me yesterday what the most disappointing playoff series has been. And I say it's this one, to be quite honest with you. I think every other series has had a little sizzle, had a little unpredictability. The Red Wings have played good hockey at times during this series and really bought it in the third period a couple times. But don't you think this series was going to be a hell of a lot more entertaining? Does it feel like a dud in comparison to the other series, or has it just not lived up to what you thought it'd be?
Depends if you're a fan of scoring or not. Because to me, the story of the series has been Pekka Rinne. Like, that's like, if you're into great dynamic goaltending performances, this has been an awesome series just because of Pekka Rinne. This is Pekka Rinne stand the bunch.
He's been now, great, it lacks that certain je ne sais quoi that other series have. The biggest controversy in this series was Todd Bertuzzi telling a security guard about a ping pong table.
Well, there was the whole Shea Weber, Henrik Zetterberg thing.
Oh, that's true. Okay, that's true. There might have been that, too.
It kind of was that. And then Henrik Zetterberg, the next game, I
put it out of my mind because it didn't result in a suspension, you see.
Oh, okay. But you know what's interesting, too? How quickly the chalkboard gets erased. Like, we had two nights of, you know, sure, there were a couple things, Malkin and Grossman. Looks like Grossman's got the bad bean now, too. But there was, like, a couple of nights where things really calmed down. And no one's hysterical anymore. It's like everything that happened last week just didn't happen. Like the churn in our brain and how we consume sports now, it's just over so fast. Like burn on it is so quick, Wish.
The burn on it is quick, but I think you have to also examine what it was. I mean, all of the people that bemoan the violence in hockey or the physicality or the chaos that we saw at the beginning of the playoffs have no concept for why it exists. And like I said yesterday, the Penguins Flyers series had to reach that apex, had to reach that boiling point because of the way the series went. There are two teams that hate each other, and the Penguins got down 3-0. Mm-hmm. It's only natural it's going to get to that point. It's only natural there's going to be a deflation of that in Game 4 and probably here in Game 5.
So if Marc-Andre Fleury can make a save, then Game 3 doesn't happen the way it did.
No.
I'm saying that tongue in cheek because that's what Doug McLean was saying yesterday. If Marc-Andre Fleury can make a save, that game doesn't explode. Oh, I blame all of this. No, he's joking about it, but it was kind of funny. You know what I think a lot of it is, Wish? I'm thinking about this the last couple of days. Because as we all sort of look back on that week in hockey and say, what the hell was that? You know what I think a lot of it is? I think we're at a place now where there's not a whole lot of separation between the teams. Everyone's kind of pretty even. And going into the playoffs, everyone thought they could win.
Mm-hmm.
Like there wasn't, you didn't feel that there was one team that's like, oh, we got in and that's good enough. Like was there one team that you felt got in and to themselves said, okay, that's good enough? No, every team felt they had a shot at it. There wasn't any team that was like, oh man, we got in the playoffs. Yeah, that's our Stanley Cup. We're growing. No, man, everyone thought they had a shot. And that just ratchets the tension up even more. And that puts that sort of extra breath into the balloon before it absolutely explodes.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But you're right. It's all calmed down. Now, the fact that it's calmed down, I think, will have an interesting effect on the Rafi Torres thing today. By the time you hear this, you might already know what the suspension is going to be. But he had his in-person hearing with Shanahan and the NHL today.
1 o'clock.
There's been some separation between the incident and the hearing. Now that we are a couple days removed from it, now that we are at trial day, what is your best guess for suspension? Keeping in mind that everyone, by the time they hear this, will already know what it is.
Nick Kyprios is making the point on Hockey Central tonight. I think it's the right one. This is the potential for Brendan Shanahan to do a good bit of PR for himself. And I don't want to say that he should be, but I think it's impossible not to be influenced by outside, i.e. media, media-driven agendas on this one. And it's an easy one to do. Phoenix is up in the series. Looks like they're in cruise control. Rafi Torres, although he's a good player and a part of their team, he's not a huge part of their team. Plus, he's a repeat offender. Plus, everyone is calling Chicken Little on this guy. The sky is falling. The sky is falling. You wonder if this isn't the chance that Brendan Shanahan has here now to treat Rafi Torres like Colin Campbell treated Chris Simon, not once but twice. I'm not saying he's going to throw 20 games at him, but I'm a lot closer to seeing what Don Cherry said the other night, 10 games.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. Because if he gives him 10, now all of a sudden you're talking about the rest of this series, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
5, 6, 7, and then 7 of the next series.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Yeah.
I think 10 might be the number.
Yep. Although Tyson Nash tweeted out, you know, still by still shots of the hit itself, pointing out how his feet don't leave the ice until the moment of contact with Marian Hossa.
Don't be hung up on feet, though. I mean,
a lot of people are saying the principal point of contact
was the head.
I understand. Listen, we've been through this hit a million times, but people keep coming back to this idea that he launched himself, like propelled. He was a human torpedo. How many times have you heard Rafi Torres in the last couple of days referred to as a torpedo? That he launched himself. He was a missile. He was Flash Gordon, like launching himself at, he was a Mountain Dew commercial. He was, you know, launching himself.
He was extreme.
Hossa. Yeah, get that Mountain Dew balloon. That's Rafi Torres. But I think it's an easy one for Shanahan. And this would be the outcry. And he has become the symbol of all of this, right? He's become the symbol of everything that happened last week. This could be like the tidy-up moment for Brendan Shanahan as we move forward as the NHL now settles down after the volcanic eruption that was last week.
The only thing I can think about when it comes to that sort of thing, you know, making a statement or whatever. They don't play politics a lot, these guys. They're kind of like, you know, like, for example, they had an opportunity to suspend Duncan Keith for the remainder of the regular season for the Sedin hit, right? They didn't.
Yep.
And the reason they didn't is because they didn't think it was fair. But they had the chance to make a political statement then, and they didn't. So I don't necessarily buy the idea that they're going to use this Torres thing as a chance to make a political statement. Also, because if there's one thing that I know about Shanahan and the way that he goes about this stuff, he's very, very wary of setting benchmarks. And if you ban Rafi Torres for the rest of the playoffs, let's say,
yeah, I know,
for what he did,
I know what you mean.
That's a bar you've set right there. That's a bar. Like it's not going to always be a Rafi Torres that does this thing, and maybe you can make the argument that if it's somebody who doesn't have the same, like if it's Carl Hagelin, let's say, that puts a guy in a stretcher, It's not going to be the same thing. It has to be like a repeat offender. But you're still saying that if you have a rap sheet like Rafi Torres does, and you do this in the playoffs, well then you're gonna play your last game of the playoffs. That's a hell of a benchmark to set.
I know. I feel so bad for him. Listen, you know that you're gonna get in these situations to take the job. So can you feel sorry for him? On the one hand, yes, but on the other hand, no. But man, I feel so bad for Brendan Shanahan.
Ooh, for Shanahan?
Yeah, I do. This is a tricky one. This is such a tricky one because there's so much, and again, we went over it on the program a couple of days ago. In that event itself, knowing how the game is played, whether it's, you know, the backside pressure and the speed of the game and the turn and the crossover and the head down and when did he leave his feet and principal point of contact and all that hit the head on the ice and then the optics of a stretcher. Man, there's a lot. There's a whole lot going on all at the same time. And oh yeah, by the way, it happened in 0.8 of a second.
I know. So, all right. Before we get to Game Show Friday, by the way, the question of the day is, who is worse than Nickelback that could play at the NHL Awards? At PuckDaddyBlog at Yahoo.com, at Wyszynski, at Jeff Merrick, hashtag at MVSW. But now it's time for a Friday favorite.
Oh, yeah!
It's Game Show Friday!
Woo.
And joining us down the line is a guy who I met at Verizon Center last night, a big fan of the show.
Hello.
Because he was so nice to come over and say hi, we reward him with a slot on Game Show Friday. He's Dave Zeltwanger. Am I saying that right, sir?
Yes, sir. Yes, that's a good one. How you doing, boys?
Doing
Dave,
well.
Dave, how are you, sir? How did you enjoy the game last night, sir?
Up until I met Wish, it was pretty good. After that, I just poked Merrick. There's no way. I can't
enjoy
the rest of this game.
now, let me ask you this. Did you go out for a, what were you drinking last night, Wish, after the game?
I went to the channel. That's my home away from home.
Beer or whiskey, sir, or both?
Beer. I only had a Guinness last night.
Oh, okay. Did you go out for to the saloon with Mr. Wyszynski?
No, I went prior to at the Chop House with several light lagers.
Oh, okay. Very nice. What's your beer of choice, sir?
It's Uncle Sammy. Sam Adams.
Sammy. I like... What was the one that I had?
You had Sam Adams before a Bruins Caps game? What are you?
Oh, no. I had the light lager at the Chop House. No, I'm not drinking Uncle Sammy. Uncle Sammy is not my, he's my distant uncle right now.
I was going to say.
Distant uncle.
I would definitely choose my beer based on who my team was playing in the first round. Like, if the Devils meet the St. Louis Blues, I'm getting every Budweiser product out of my house. It has no place here.
I had to get rid of the Iron City since I became a Caps fan. So
yeah, get rid of that Pittsburgh beer. I'll tell you, what's the best DC based beer?
I don't know. The Chop House has got some good ones.
Yeah, there's some Ale House, Chop House kind of joints that do their own brews. Like the folks a place that they have, like this place called the Sweetwater Tavern. Those cats do pretty good brews. There's a brewery called Lost Rhino, I think it's in D.C., that does really good brews. There's a few. It's not the most thriving beer area, per se, but there's some places that are solid. There's also, by the way, Merrick, I don't know if I ever told you this. Did you know that I brewed my own beer for my wedding?
You did, eh?
Yeah,
what kind of brew was it?
My wife and I brewed... It was supposed to taste like Fat Tire, I think, is how it was supposed to taste. But there's a brewery your own beer place in Alexandria, Virginia, where you just go and you can taste all the beer they have. And it's basically all the recipes are knockoffs of labels that actually exist. They just give them 20 different names.
So what was your knockoff?
The knockoff was Fat Tire. So, like, we brewed that. And then what you do is you just spend the afternoon there and you drink beer and you eat terrible microwave nachos. And you brew your beer, and then you come back a few weeks later and you bottle it. So we made a wedding beer with two little Cupid dolls of me and her on the front of the label, and that was the beer of choice at the wedding, and it went over really well, along
did
with all the martinis that we had.
Did you get hammered at your wedding?
I didn't. I got hammered after my wedding.
No, that's what I mean. But that night, your wedding night, did you get barbecued?
Listen, when it's your wedding night, you get lit, but you don't get barbecued because you know you need to be at least cognizant for the room that you've rented.
That's what I'm saying.
Exactly. So, but our wedding was epic because we brewed our own beer, we had a martini bar, and the people that were running the martini bar gave such healthy pours that our wedding coordinator actually had to leave at one point to get more vodka. She had to go to like the liquor store down the street to get more vodka because they were pouring them so stiff. And it was like people fell in love that night. It was a really, really solid, from like a let your guests have their fun kind of perspective. Our wedding was epic.
Now, Dave, before we get on with Game Show Friday, do you have any questions about Greg Wyshynski's wedding for him?
We'll see. No, I think I'm good. I think I'm good.
You're good? All right. Let's get on with it then, Wish. Enough about your wedding.
Son of a bitch.
Your boozy wedding, sir, and let's get on with the game show.
So, being that Dave is a Capitals fan and being that Merrick and I are cynical, we wanted to give him a Caps-centric quiz, but wanted to talk about, obviously, their playoff failures. So,
yeah, thanks,
Dave,
for that, by the way. 23 years of failure. Way to narrow that down.
It's what we do. But so now there's most of these questions are from Quizmaster Wyshynski. There are a few that are from Quizmaster Merrick. Those will come at the end. I prefer to think of that as the end of the race when your lungs are hurting and all you want to do is pass out.
I'm a hill at the end of the race.
Here's the downhill portion is me. The uphill portion in a pounding rainstorm is Merrick. And here we are, Game Show Friday edition, Capital Failures. And again, you need 6 of 10. That's all you need to win the prize. And here we go. Ready?
Yep, let's go.
Here we go. This Detroit Red Wings grindliner scored the game-winning overtime goal in Game 2 of the 1998 Stanley Cup Final, putting the Capitals down 2-0 en route to a sweep. Name this grindliner.
Oh, that would be – well, you got to go back and get Esa Tikkanen that missed the empty netter. It's right there that would have won it, but it was Chris Draper.
Correct.
In Game 4 of the 1996 Conference Quarterfinals, Peter Nedved won a 139-minute-long overtime classic for the Penguins against the Capitals. But Washington had a chance to win in the second overtime. Alas, this former forward failed to score on a penalty shot. Who was he?
You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know this one.
Well, apparently I do.
No, Dave, you don't have to be a rocket scientist.
Adam Oates.
Joe Juno, jeez.
Joe Juno, dadgummit, that was the other RIT here.
that got a dadgummit, dude. He's upset now. In 2003, the Capitals blew a 2-0 series lead and lost to the Tampa Bay Lightning in 6 on a Martin Saint-Louis goal. How many overtimes did that Game 6 elimination game go?
That's hard.
I was at that one. It was long enough that I sobered up for that game. It was 3 overtimes.
Correct, Amundo.
Long enough that I sobered up. I like Dave.
All right, question 4. This hulking former defenseman who played from 1997 to 2003 has the worst playoff plus-minus as a Capital with a minus 10. Who is he?
Well, if you're talking bad defenseman, probably Brendan Witt.
Correct.
Wow. I was going to go with the hit by a car clue, but you didn't need it. All right, done. All right, you're up to 3.
All right, question 5. This former goaltender is the Capitals' all-time playoff leader in wins as well as losses and overtime losses in the playoffs. Name him.
That's Ole.
Correct, Amundo.
Olaf Kolzig.
Yeah. Correct. This New York Islanders Hall of Famer scored the game-tying goal in the Easter Epic on April 18th, 1987.
Pat LaFontaine.
No, listen to the question.
Game-tying goal, sir.
Game-tying.
Quadruple overtime. The answer we were looking for, Mr. Hasty, is Brian Trottier would be the answer we were looking for.
Calm down.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Question number 7, I think, or I don't know what it is. In 2008, this current Toronto Maple Leaf eliminated the Washington Capitals with an overtime goal in Game 7. Current Leaf, 2008 playoffs, overtime goal, Game 7 victory.
Current Caps, we're going to take a guess and say Hamrlick?
Current Toronto Maple Leaf.
You're playing for the Flyers.
Is that the old Joffrey Lupul?
Joffrey Lupul is correct.
Saskatchewan, Alberta.
But enough about overtime defeats. Let's talk specifically about Capitals players that play terribly in the playoffs. Against the Montreal Canadiens in 2010, this Capitals forward took a team-high 44 shots on goal without scoring once. Name him.
That would be... Now, I would say Alexander Semin, but he usually disappears in the playoffs. But I'll go with Semin.
You're right.
You are correct. You almost dodged it. Yes, Alexander Semin, who did have a nasty snipe last night against Tim Thomas, 44 shots on goal, countless more that went into the netting, nothing to show on the score sheet against Montreal. I now pass the baton to Quizmaster Merrick.
Our man Dave's already got his six. 2-4. Yeah, he's already got his six. You still want some of these just for giggles?
Yeah, you might as well. I poked the bear. Let's go ahead and let's get it.
All right. You know what? I don't think these are very hard, though. Honestly,
I really don't say that stuff.
These aren't that hard. Wish they're not that hard. Okay, 74-75, the Washington. And these have nothing to do with the playoffs, by the way. I just freestyle some Washington questions, yo. 74-75, the Capitals enter the league with which other team?
I think we just had this the other day. I'm going to say the California Golden Seals?
No, they were expansion 67. This would be the... Wish, you want to blast off on this one?
74-75?
Yeah.
Simonnole.
They may be a franchise in the future. There's an arena waiting there.
The Quebec Nordiques?
Scouts.
Scouts. Oh, okay.
Scouts. Okay. There are four retired numbers. You guys see them when you go to the games, right? Give them to me.
Yep. You got... now I'm blanking. The coach, Dale Hunter.
Yep.
Rod Langway. Ivan LeBrun.
Yep.
He's right there. I can see his face, too.
Great hard shot, fast skater, played in the WHA for the Birmingham Bulls and the Cincinnati Stingers, now that I think about it. Retired, born-again Christian, lives in New
Market. Oh, Mike Gardner.
There you go.
Mike Gardner.
You got on the born-again Christian clue? Really? All right, good for you. 1974, the first ever draft choice. I like that. You got on the born-again clue. First ever draft pick by the Washington Capitals. From the Regina Pats, a big defenseman. Who was this guy?
I've heard this before. I don't know.
Traded to Detroit. Greg Jolly.
Greg Jolly.
All right. In that same draft, in the second round, Washington took the second black player to ever play in the National Hockey League. Who was he?
Oh, didn't they? NHL Network did something on him. I don't remember.
Had a great mustache.
Chris Versteeg.
No, it's not Chris Versteeg. It is Mike Marson. Became the second. And, okay, one more. This Capital player was the first to go, the first in the history of the NHL, to go directly from high school to the National Hockey League. Turned down a scholarship at Providence. Who is he, or who was he?
Was that Bobby Carpenter?
You know it, Dave. Atta boy.
If you want bonus stuff. Wishes Devils.
That's right. Turned into a hell of a checking center.
Played with Richey and Chorsky, right? With Devils, Wish?
He did. And that's my quintessential checking line, is that I love the idea of you got the face-off guy, you got a real shutdown winger, and you put your little scoring guy in that line, too. I love that. That's my favorite configuration. It's like the skinny, medium, fat for ice hockey.
The skinny, medium, fat?
On Nintendo. Everybody, 75% of the audience is applauding right now, by the way.
I'm not picking it up. Hey, listen, Dave, you did great, bud.
Thank you.
How many did he get? He got that one, that was 6, 7, 8. Now he got 9 of them.
That's 17 hours of studying since I talked to Wish last night.
Wow.
Listen to that.
Damn. Is that kind of like cheating? I don't know that we encourage that kind of behavior.
It's not cheating at all. I respect that moxie. I think a lot of people that do Game Show Friday just kind of toss it off and whatever, you know.
I want one of our contestants to come on just bombed. Can we have that? Hey, listen,
we've had contestants that have bombed.
Yes, we have. But I mean, guys that are bombed, or girls for that matter. I want a drunk contestant.
I hear you. We'll do drunk. We'll do drunk next time. Anybody who wants to start drinking at like 8 a.m. and come on Game Show Friday, we'll have you on.
Wouldn't that be awesome if we had someone from like Los Angeles? Are you a hammered ma'am? Yes, I am. When did you start? Well.
All right, dude. Well, thank you so much for staying high last night. Thank you so much for being so good at Game Show Friday. We will take your information and we will ship you out some sort of a trinket when we get them.
Not a problem. Thank you guys for everything, all your coverage. Wish you know here hockey coverage is a little light.
Oh, that's somewhat true.
Hey, Dave, before we yes, let sir. You go, we do this with all of our contestants on Game Show Friday. It's your dime. It's your time. You want to pimp out your job, say hello to a lady friend, your buddies, guys back at work. Go for it. Anything you want to promote, your Twitter feed, your Twitter handle, anything. Go for it.
No, the Twitter feed, I'm just a looky-loo. Just say hi to my wife, kids, my buddy Dan, and my brother Tim.
Nice.
It's a beautiful thing, man.
Hey, where do you live, by the way? Where do you live?
Up in Middletown, Maryland.
Okay, so you got to schlep in for the games then, huh?
Yes. Oh, I work down here at 14th and H, so it's a nice walk.
Are you a season ticket holder?
No, my buddy has bought into a season ticket package, so we go occasionally.
Awesome. Cheap seats, well, thanks. Upstairs. Yeah, right. That's where you got to sit.
Those are the fun seats, bro, every time. Sorry. Hey, Dave, thanks for playing, dude. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, guys. Not a problem.
There's our man, Dave. Dave was good. You know what?
You know what's funny about seating in an arena? Like,
what?
I often think of like the first six or seven rows as diehard fans. Like, those are people that go, pay a lot of money, kind of sit by the glass. But yet at the same time, I also think that's where a lot of the folks that just take tickets. I can't decide if those are diehard fans or corporate fans in most buildings. Do you think they're corporate fans down by the glass?
Depends on the market. Because here in Toronto, they're corporate fans. That's why when you look at the beginning of the second and third period at the Air Canada Centre, it's barren until the first whistle, and then everyone comes back from the President's Lounge and they're back in their seats.
I remember when I used to I used to get those seats through my mom's company when I was a kid. So like mm-hmm. there was a corporate element there for Devils games, but at the same time, like the old ladies that would have all the pins on their jerseys, you know, like those women, like that go to all the fan club meetings and like know the players' sisters and stuff. Like they sat there too. So I don't know if it was all corporate or if there was a certain element of the diehard fan down there as well. I mean, all the diehards sit upstairs. Like, I don't know, unless you want to just, you're going someplace and you want to get the visceral thrill of sitting near the ice to get the whooshing of the skates and the speed of the puck and the whole thing. Like, upstairs is where it's at. There was a fight last night at the Caps game. Or close
there was?
To one, at least. Close
really?
To one. Yeah, three Bruins fans got into it with a Caps fan third period. And a lot of yelling, a lot of shoving. Eventually, the security came up. No, I don't think there was a cop, but it was like the security detail that came up, mm-hmm. and the Bruins fans were ejected. But it was actually one of the first times I had seen that kind of altercation at this arena. Back in the old Cap Center, there used to be fights every night. It was beautiful.
This arena,
it's so family friendly and so innoxious sometimes that like I don't think that it's really the environment for there to be fights. But there was that was almost the powder keg last night.
You ever go to a game in Montreal on a Saturday night? You ever see a Habs game on a Saturday night?
I've never been to on a Saturday night, no.
Every single person listening to this podcast needs to experience this at least once in their life. There is, and honestly, you may say, airy-fairy, artsy-fartsy, whatever. There's an unbelievable energy in that city on game day, Saturdays specifically. You can't go to a cafe, you can't go get breakfast, you can't go, you know, walking down old Montreal on the cobblestone streets, you can't go to a bar for a beer, you can't go to a grocery store, a drug mart, anything like that without hearing everybody talk about the game. Like the entire city talks about the game that night. The minute you get in the building, I can't explain it. The way they do the game presentation is perfect. You see Jean Béliveau sitting behind the bench. There, I honestly wish, like, whenever I go to Saturday night in Montreal at the Bell Center, there's just, and it can be a dog-ass game, but those minutes leading up to the anthems, leading up to the puck drop, it's like the hair's on your arms, dude. There is nothing. Next time you're here, dude, I'm taking you to a game in Montreal on a Saturday. I have to do this for you. It's one of the great hockey experiences that everyone should have.
So next time I'm in Toronto, we're going to a game in Montreal on a Saturday night.
We're driving.
Like that.
Well, you know what? No, dude. Caravan. Hey, listen. Well, no, what we'll do, next time you're in Toronto, we'll get a couple, I fly Porter, they're my favorite. God, and if anyone's listening who's flown Porter, you know, you talk about it like you're in the cult of Apple. It's so true, once you've flown Porter, it's like the best. We'll get a quickie flight to Montreal, spend the night in Montreal, and then fly back the next day. It's like an hour flight, dude. Seriously.
Is this funded by your TV money?
Oh yeah, I saw that long. Oh no, yeah, it's just the tree that I have in the backyard since I work at Rogers that we all get. Exactly. We don't get paychecks. We all get trees to plant in our backyard.
Actually, it's a cell phone tower made to look like a tree. That's the issue.
Yeah, that's right. Because we're all with the long.
Karen Douglas writes in: I will never understand people who want to sit by the glass, can't see, need to be up.
Yeah,
I think everyone should sit by the glass at some point. Really, because like it is a hell of an experience, even during warm-ups and stuff like that, to be down by the glass. It's really cool, but it's not where I want to watch a game. I want to watch a game from section 417 in the Verizon Center, which is center ice up. That's where I want to sit.
Yeah, I want to be center. Yeah, center ice about 25 rows up, 20 to 25 rows up. That's the one for me. Although if you ask scouts, they'll want to be in the corner. Because for them, they get where they think
and
they
that's
get
the thing,
greatest
like,
perspective
and
on the
be,
game.
Not to be a snob about it, but like you're at the game. To see things that happen not on television, right? So yeah. The higher up you are, the more you're going to be able to see what the camera doesn't behind the play, around the arena, on the benches. Like that's the whole point of being there. And like you'd want to have a vantage point where you can catch all that stuff happening.
But you know what? You know what? If you, to your point about having to go like at least once and have the against the glass experience, if for no other reason, then I think you'll come away with it if you really open your mind to it. And if you're a ref baiter, you just don't care anyway and you still go on about hating them, but you really get a sense of how fast it is and how hard it is to call at that level. Because again, when you're sitting 25 rows back, to your point, Wish, you can see a lot of things. You have that greater perspective. Get down there right on ice level. And then move with all the bodies, and then try to make calls. I've always maintained it's the hardest sport to officiate. You're right there on the ice, moving on your skates, trying to make calls, trying to follow numbers, trying to follow offsides, trying to follow fouls ahead of the play, behind the play, during the play. It's the hardest thing to do. I think more people than not, if you give it a chance, I think if you sit ice level right along the glass, you'll come away saying, "Man, those guys have a tough gig." Those guys have a hard job.
Mark Cole writes in, don't you and Wish also have a media-driven agenda regarding violence in hockey, Merrick?
A media-driven agenda? How so?
Well, because we're the media and we're driving the agenda.
I'm sure. I don't get like I'm not sure what his point is.
Well, I just think that you have talked about the fact that it's a media driven agenda to have be outraged over these things, right?
Oh yeah, because, I see. Oh yeah. Oh, listen. You know what I'm saying? I make no bones about it. I mean, everyone has a perspective and an editorial slant, and I like things the way that I like things. Unlike many, I do like when things change, and I don't really resist a whole lot to it. Hence my love of the shootout. Sorry, Greg Wyshynski. But I still maintain that this game changed too many things too quickly. And that's where we're at the point now where we're like, oh man, what the hell did we just do?
That's the real problem with the playoffs so far. It's not the violence. It's the lack of the majesty of the shootout. Nicholas Murphy writes in, "Hey Wish, ask your counterpart why he hates the fans. Why must he torture us with Nickelback? No one likes Nickelback, and we will all be getting a beer when they perform at the NHL Awards."
You know, no. What I'm doing is I'm trying to like them. I'm going to give them a chance. I'm going to try to like Nickelback. I'm going to give it a chance.
Regarding streaking at the NHL Awards, this is from Simon. Mike Commodore would totally streak into a pile
God,
of cash.
Bingo! That's the guy. Buy that man a ticket. Buy Mike Commodore a ticket to the NHL Awards. Go. Here's the deal, Mike. I'm going to send you to Vegas. There's one catch.
QOD, who would be worse than Nickelback at the NHL Awards? Dave Vandermas, the Village People. Be worse than Nickelback.
They'd be kind of in tune with Vegas, though, because that's really sort of become a Vegas act.
Paul Hoffman says Skrillex with a dial-up modem. I agree with that. Chris Kraft, better question. I think the player who will most likely streak will be Biz Nasty. Who wouldn't want to see both he and Cassian hammered on stage? Cheers. That's true, but mostly because we know now that Biz Nasty doesn't tie down his clothes at NHL events, which is the real problem.
Man, I love him too. He's a wonderful guy, and I think he's fantastic for the game. But of all things to forget, like, isn't that, considering what his role in, isn't that kind of like forgetting to, I don't know, wear one of your skates?
Yeah. Like when your job is to fight.
Yeah. Okay. It's like if your job is to skate, you better have two skates on there. If your job is to shoot the puck, you probably should take a stick out there. And if your job is to fight, you might want to have that jersey tied down, Rob Ray.
R.M. Cooper, which band would be worse than Nickelback at the NHL Awards? Unquestionably, Rush. Oh, man.
No way. Rush.
I know there's a whole group of people out there that just want to punch through this radio right now. I'm with this dude. I'm not a Rush fan, but I know a lot of people are.
I'll punch both you dudes. Rush is awesome.
Alicia Krawitz writes in, does Lady Gaga count as a band for this poll? If so, she would get my vote. Puts on a great show. I'll give her that, though. I love Lady Gaga. I would see Lady Gaga at the NHL Awards. She'd come out dressed as a Stanley Cup, like a sexy, slutty Stanley Cup.
How about, okay, would you be warmer to Nickelback if, like, a hologram of Maurice Richard popped up on the stage?
Why don't we have
a great
holograms?
Like, for yesterday.
The benefit of hologram technology gives us the chance to have anybody that we want.
Exactly. Pick an NHLer. This is a great one for our topic on Monday.
So the obvious answer is to use the available technology, do the Tupac hologram, and have him do a rap break in Stompin' Tom Connors' The Hockey Song.
Oh. That might be the only way that I warm to that song. Who would the hologram hockey player be for you?
If we could resurrect a hockey player with a hologram at the NHL Awards?
Yeah, like, here comes, wow, look, Eddie Shore! Like, who would it be for you?
I know exactly who it would be.
It feels like for the Vezina Trophy, you had, like, the hologram Terry Sawchuk handing it out?
No, it'd be Bill Masterton. Just so you can look at this guy and be like, he's not worthy of this award! He's not a... Dude, I died! This guy overcame a headache.
You could have Bill Masterton hand out the Bill Masterton Award. That's pimp. Oh, wish. Oh, my God. Gary,
wait,
if you're listening,
this?
Or...
Matt Cook? I died. This guy stopped getting suspended, and he wins what?
I pretty much died on the ice. My last words were never again.
You had a broken leg. I died.
Way to go, Max. You broke your neck and came back. I am no longer sharing oxygen with anybody.
Just have Bill Masterton.
Oh, you took a puck to the face?
Let me tell you a story about that.
Just to have Bill Masterton come back and chirp dudes with the award. Oh, really? You stopped elbowing guys in the head. Congratulations, Matt. That's why you win this award?
Oh, you rehabbed for 6 months to come back? That's interesting. For a guy who died, you know what that is? A hangnail. Give me back my trophy.
You just do a run-in and say, no, I still win this trophy, and I should win this trophy every year.
The Bill Masterton hologram is such a dick. He's just a dick. He's so bitter. And by the way, for all you media people out there, Masterton. Ton.
Yes, thank you.
Not Stun. There's no Miss Masterston. No. Ton.
Bill Masterston. Ooh, Jeffy just had himself a good laugh. And I'm still going.
I want Bill Masterton to award the Bill Masterton Trophy and then chirp the guy who wins the award because he came back from a broken leg.
And another thing, this looks nothing like me. The likeness is terrible.
First of all, I had more hair than that.
All right. On that note, everybody enjoy hockey this weekend. I am Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
I got to give a shout out to Friday Night Hockey this week, 7 o'clock Eastern. I'm back on the desk with Damian Cox. Tonight it is the Ottawa 67s and the Niagara Ice Dogs OHL semifinals tonight, 7 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet. That's what I'm doing tonight, Wish. Yeah,
awesome.
Man.
Thanks again, everybody, for listening this week. Good week. Lots of fun stuff. Back next week with more fun stuff. And enjoy it, man.
Deep breath.
There you go. Yeah,
deep breath.
It's great.
Deep breath.
That's right.
Deep breath.
Well, you don't need to do that anymore. All the violence is done. I'm sure we'll not have another incident throughout the entire playoffs now that everybody is fun.
So the children can watch again.
Prairie Dawn writes in, I think this is a proper topper. The end of Merrick versus Wyshynski is so fucking dark and funny as shit. That's true.
Done.
Rule 48, huh? Protects your head? You know what they could have used back in the day? A rule that kept you alive. Yeah.
Oh, look at you. Look at that fancy helmet, Mr. Messi. Oh, the M11. Yeah, you know what I had back when I played? I had my hair to protect my head.
And another thing. Why is the Hart Trophy for MVP and my trophy is for guys that come back from injuries? I died. How about a little respect? Oh, congratulations. Oh, you worked through your alcoholism.
How do I not win this thing every year? The team I played for doesn't even exist anymore.
Why do they give out my award during a piss break?
Complaining about soft ice? I wish the ice was soft when I played. I'd still be here. Oh, man.
Mr. Shanahan, I have a video I'd like to see you make. All right.
Stop the fight. All right.
Phil Mesterton hologram.
Yeah. All right. Nice.
All right. Bye, everybody. We'll see you next week. Thank you.